I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, to mark the 100th birthday of the Indianapolis Woman's Press Club, we're going to talk about the past, present, and future of women in journalism. We'll talk about the gains that have been made and the work that still needs to be done. We'll discuss all of this with incoming club president Tara Puckey, longtime member and retired Indianapolis Star News writer Marion Garmel, and Jessica Ray, a Franklin College journalism student. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the 100th birthday / anniversary of the Indianapolis Woman's Press Club. Fortunate to have as my guests Tara Puckey, who is the incoming club president. Tara, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
It's good to have you here. Marion Garmel, who is a club member and is a retired Indianapolis Star News writer. Marion, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
It's good to have you here. And Jessica Ray, who is a Franklin College journalism student and until just recently the assistant producer of this show. Jessica, welcome to this room in the No Limits universe.
Thanks for having me here, John.
It's good to have you here. I should start this by doing, I think this is a first for this show. I actually have to do three different individual disclosures. The first one is an obvious one. Jessica Ray is a student of mine, also has worked with us at the State House File, and was the assistant producer of this show. Marion Garmel and I worked together for years at first the Indianapolis News and then the Indianapolis Star.
Correct.
And Tara Puckey is chapter coordinator for the Society of Professional Journalists, and I am the treasurer of the local SPJ professional chapter. So I think that we've taken care of that. If you would like to join this conversation, please join us at 1-866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Tara, how about if you start? What do we have planned for the Indianapolis Woman's Press Club's 100th anniversary?
Well, I think Marion might be the one that can speak to the actual celebration, but I can kind of set the tone for what's coming. I think it's a wonderful celebration of what we've done in the past, a massive, massive amount of work by a wonderful group of women. I think then we're also going to look forward to kind of where we're going in the future and hopefully the next 100 years and how wonderful they will be.
Marion, okay, it sounds like you've been set up there. So
I'm the chairman of the 100th anniversary celebration.
Okay.
So, and have had a group of wonderful women doing research on the history of the club. And we're going to meet at Hollyhock Hill Restaurant this Saturday at 11 a.m. for just cocktails and reception and then a lunch and an award ceremony. We give awards every May. We give out scholarships. We honor our members who've done the best communications and service to the organization. And also, we're going to have an installation of our first set of second century officers, and that would be Tara Puckey as president, Mary Ann Barathy as our vice president, I'm the secretary, and Julie Slaymaker is the treasurer.
And does this Saturday represent the actual historic birthday, or when was it formed?
It was formed on February 18th, 1913, by a group of 13 women meeting at Ayers Tea Room for lunch.
And that no longer exists, so it's a
that's
little
right.
Difficult.
And well, we had hoped to do the restored Ayers Tea Room in the State Museum, but they're undergoing renovations. We did go back there in February on the exact day for just an informal gathering. But the women who met on that day and then another 15 the next month became our charter members. And they were from all over the state. They were in Indianapolis with the Indiana Federation of Clubs to sort of shepherd a bill through the Indiana legislature on affordable housing and child labor laws. They met because they were the women in various clubs who wrote. They wrote books, they wrote for newspapers, they were publishers, they were editors, and they wanted to keep in touch with each other around the state. So that's why they formed the club.
So that was the genesis of the organization.
Right.
Sounds like it was more a literary club originally.
Well, not so much literary, because they were all press people, basically. They all wrote about issues.
Okay.
And they were championing, some were suffragists, some were prohibitionists. One woman introduced a bill on affordable housing and is known in Evansville for being responsible for reforming all the housing laws and getting suitable housing for poor people.
And was it primarily that they formed the club so that they'd have a way to keep in touch with each other, or was there another goal? You said that they introduced a bill in the legislature. Was there an agenda beyond just creating sort of a social network?
The agenda was that they wanted women their issues were education, social reform, affordable housing, health issues that were not being covered adequately in newspapers. And while many of them already worked for newspapers, their stuff was kind of relegated to the women's pages. They could write about fairs and festivals or whatever, but they wanted to write about more serious things and get them on the front pages.
Yeah, it's something that I think people of who are below, say, the age of 30, do not remember a time when the feature section just was referred to as the women's section.
As women's, or society. The
or society
section
pages.
Even before that.
We are talking about really the past, present, and future of women in journalism here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've heard a little bit, Tara, about the challenges confronting women in journalism 100 years ago. As we start this second century, what are the big ones confronting women in journalism now?
I think a lot of the challenges that we're seeing in this industry tend to go across the board between men and women. And I think that obviously those barriers, things like the society pages and the women's pages, a lot of those have come down. And so I think really as we move into this new phase of the Women's Press Club and really journalism in general, I think it's kind of important that we think about it as a new way to train the people who love the news, specifically women in the Women's Press Club. But we do, Marion, have men who are members.
Yes, we do.
And we love them just as much as the rest. So I think it's really important that we kind of use this new turn of the century to train journalists. And also I think it's important that we start thinking about educating our consumers, our news consumers. As one of roughly 65 journalism organizations in the country, I think it's important that we make sure that we are educating those people who are consuming our news. We've watched news outlets do it wrong, do it right, do it first and wrong. And I think it's really important that we're making sure that we help them understand what we're doing and those of us who are doing it correctly.
Are there still, though, and I get the fact, obviously, this is the world I live in, too, that there are huge issues confronting everybody in the business right now. Are there still gender-specific issues? I know, for example, MSNBC runs a promo in which Andrea Mitchell talks about how difficult it was to be a woman in the business, and in some ways still is, to be a woman in the business. I'm going to throw that one first to you, Tara, and then I'm going to also throw it to Jessica Ray.
I think that one of the odd positions that I'm in is I'm kind of in the middle. Having associated with this wonderful group of women who face those challenges, I kind of see some of those themes carrying through. But in my own career and the people that I'm working with currently, I'm not seeing a lot of those challenges, and I'd be interested to hear what she has to say. But I think, coming in this new age of new technology, new tools, I think a lot of those barriers are kind of crumbling.
Jessica, are there still gender-based barriers?
I think especially coming into this industry right after my freshman year, jumping in as a reporter intern here locally in the Morgan County area, I never
you
saw.
You can mention the newspaper if you want to. Give them a shout. They did the right thing.
Martinsville Reporter Times, and then last summer I worked for the Evansville Courier and Press. And in both newsrooms, I never felt singled out as a young female journalist. I never felt like I wasn't given the same opportunities as the male interns there, or even the male staff there. I will say that the thing that I've run into the most is being treated differently from sources, never from the newsroom, and never having opportunities, you know, taken away from me or not given to me as a reporter intern, but being treated differently by sources, I think, was the most interesting.
In what ways do they treat you differently?
Oh, you know, and I guess the men out there can come at me and tell me something different, but I don't think that they would necessarily have, you know, a representative at the State House commenting on their eye color, or, you know, being told at I had to go cover a charity kind of thing at a VFW where they were honoring a family and were writing a check to that family. And I had a gentleman ask me to stand up on a table and kind of dance a little bit and take pictures of the men in the room. And it was just very much so being taken aback by that, like, what? So,
how did you handle that, out of curiosity?
Well, I turned beet red and kind of stammered a little bit. And anybody who knows me knows it's very typical of my personality. And I was just like, sir, I'm here to do a story. And the other people in the room, you know, kind of shut him up a little bit. But
how much did this guy had to drink? I have to ask the question.
He was a little bit inebriated. I will say that. But I just, you know, I'm not sure that the other male intern reporters at the statehousefile.com would have, you know, had a representative be like, oh, your eyes are so pretty, and go with that kind of train of thought. So
that is very interesting, because in 1961, when my first newspaper was the National Observer, a Dow Jones publication that was published, a family weekly newspaper published out of Washington, D.C., and I was the first woman in the newsroom. After World War II, there were a lot of women in newsrooms when the men were overseas. And that's because Barney Kilgore, who published Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal, did not believe that women could talk to business people. So he didn't like women in the newsroom. He thought that they wouldn't be taken seriously by bankers and insurance people and whatever. And I'm not so sure that that has really changed, but there are a lot of women in news positions now who are very, I don't think there are any barriers within the news organizations itself anymore.
We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism, marking the Indianapolis Woman's Press Club's 100th birthday. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Jessica, one of the things that has changed, though, you know, as Marion's pointed out, there were relatively few women in journalism now. The journalism program at Franklin College in the 10 years that I've been the director varies between being 65% and 75% female now, and that proportion has shifted, you know, through the industry too. There are many more women in not just working in the newsroom, but also in positions of leadership. How has that changed the dynamic? Does it create a sense of aspiration for you or possibility?
Oh, I mean, especially with our current Franklin College new student newspaper staff. I mean, over the past 4 years, you know, that I've seen, it has been led by women consistently and by, like, startling numbers. I mean, since I've been there on staff over the past 3 years, we've only had two male editors, and that's not executive editor, just two male members of our editorial staff. And over the past 4 years, the executive editor has consistently been a woman. And I just think that, to me, is kind of awe-inspiring, to be in such an environment that is conducive to supporting women as leaders consistently and as thoroughly, especially, you know, as the Franklin program. And I know it's been like that at
And that's reflective of most programs across the country
but
right now.
It's interesting, Mary, to note that one of our past members, Margaret Moore Post, was, I believe, the founder of your journalism department at Franklin College, or one of the very early directors.
One of the early ones. Actually, the journalism program's like 100 years old there, so it's possible. But
then she wasn't the founder.
Yeah, it went through different kinds of names and all of that.
But I read that somewhere.
We are talking about the future of past, present, and future of women in journalism to mark the Indiana Women's Press Club 100th birthday. My guests are Tara Puckey, Marion Garmel, and Jessica Ray. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism to mark the Indiana Woman's Press Club's 100th birthday. I keep stumbling. I want to say women's, and it is woman. It's singular. Indiana Woman's Press Club. My guests are Tara Puckey, who is the incoming club president. I guess your turn in office starts officially on Saturday. Marion Garmel, who is the secretary and also a retired Indianapolis Star News writer, and Jessica Ray, a Franklin College journalism student. We were talking before the break about sort of the transformation, the shift from this being kind of a male-dominated business to the point now where the numbers have almost shifted in the other direction. I'm going to give Tara and Marion a chance to chime in on that. The ways that it's perhaps changed the business and the profession to have, you know, here in this market. 50 years ago, it probably was not likely that you were going to have a female publisher of the state's largest newspaper, but now we've seen two, including the current one. I'll start with Tara and then go to Marion.
I think it's doing amazing things, obviously, in the local markets, and we're seeing changes in the way that newsrooms run. But I also think that we're seeing amazing things happen because they've been able to become in these positions within the newsroom, that they're also doing leadership things within the organizations. They are changing and shaping the way that this profession is moving.
In what ways?
The Society of Professional Journalists, Hagit Lamour, was just recently a wonderful female president who helped the organization develop new initiatives to reach out. Obviously, the Women's Press Club has tons and tons of female leaders, but I think we're seeing them kind of morph the way that things are moving. They're voicing their opinion. We're seeing stories in different genres that we may not have seen before. We're seeing personal. Women, I think, approach things in a different way than men sometimes. Not to say that men aren't capable of doing those things, but I think that women brought a wonderful sense of emotion and beautiful storytelling that I think maybe wasn't focused on when they had to just write the society pages and the food reviews and things like that. So I think they're bringing a wonderful change as we move forward.
And Marion, you were part of that change. I mean, it was your generation that really kicked those walls down.
A little earlier than the ones who are the most prominent now. I remember when I was in Washington, Nancy Dickerson came in at ABC, but we were trained as young people sort of to want to have families and get married. Our careers were not our major objective. It just turned out that that's the way it worked. The women who came after us had many opportunities, and they just barged through the doors. When I was at the National Observer, we had a woman war correspondent in Vietnam, Dickie Chappelle, who actually was killed over there while reporting for us. Diane Shaw, who went to the University of Indiana, became a sports writer at the National Observer. Women have just gone on into all areas, and they can do, they bring a kind of sensibility to storytelling that where they're the Ernie Piles of today.
And I know what you mean, but the people who didn't live and breathe journalism.
They concentrate on ordinary people and their stories. And while they do a lot of investigative reporting and they do cover the major problems and stories, you find women today reporting from everywhere and writing about everything. And the most prominent columnists, political columnists, and even in this town, we still have Andrea Neal. We have
Erica Smith.
Erica Smith, right. But it's also interesting that in 1913, in the very early days of journalism, you had a lot of female publishers who were co-publishers with their husbands and who did influence the way that their cities were developed. For example, in our founding president, Mrs. Moffat, in Elwood, was a co-publisher with her husband of the Elwood newspaper. She was responsible for getting a public library in Elwood because of the editorials that she wrote.
We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism. We're marking the Indiana Woman's Press Club turning 100. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, what challenges still remain? There are, you know, I think we've talked a bit about there are huge challenges for the news industry. Are there challenges that are gender specific? Tara Puckey, I'll start with you.
You know, I can honestly say that the areas that I work in and my previous experience, I'm not seeing a whole lot. I know that there are some, like she said, with sources and how they treat people. And I'm sure that there is a newsroom somewhere where someone feels like they're being treated differently. But I will say that, you know, I attended IUPUI and their journalism program, and it was largely made up of females. And so we drove what happened in the classroom. We drove our learning. It was wonderful. And so my experience there and elsewhere has been fantastic. So I think that we'll see things pop up, but I think they're so isolated and smaller issues than they were before.
Is it fair to say, then, that the glass ceiling is gone in the profession? I'm seeing everyone looking up at the ceiling. Nobody looking at me right now when I ask the question, which is a classic classroom avoidance technique. That Jessica, do you think the glass ceiling is gone?
I wouldn't say it's gone, but I think that there's been so much progress made that if the women in my generation aren't questioning whether or not they can apply to be a sports writer at ESPN, or if, you know, if we're not questioning our own capabilities about being able to get these jobs that have been, you know, predominantly taken by men, then I think that we're starting to see it dissolve. I mean, I still feel like in the industry there are, like, what Tara said, that there are those places out there where it's not gone, and that's a problem. But I feel like if our generation as a whole has the faith and that belief that we can do whatever job is out there, you know, that we're on the right track.
Marion Carmel.
Well, there still are. And I don't know if there's still difficulties, but I imagine that there are. The first women sports reporters, for example, had trouble getting into the locker rooms because, I mean, the athletes were all males, but they did some, and now more can, but it's still a problem. I remember Helen Thomas, when covering politics in Washington, would be questioning a senator or something, and he would walk into the men's room. Well, she would just walk in after him, so...
And chase him down.
Chase him down. But those kinds of things still exist, I think. It's the way. But that's the same difficulty you have with all of your sources. You have to be able to go where they are and talk to them where they are.
Well, is there a reason then to, and I'm going to try to ask this, because we are marking the Indiana Woman's Press Club's 100th. If the challenges aren't still gender specific, is there a continuing reason for the press club, the Indiana Woman's Press Club? Tara Puckey.
Absolutely. I think that obviously, historically, we fought against some of those challenges. We pushed against the glass ceiling. We did those wonderful things. But I think that really what makes the Women's Press Club so wonderful is that it is not just a group of females. Like I said, we have male members. It is a group of people who have a passion, a love for journalism. It's a family. It's a wonderful group of women and men who are devoted to this business, who are devoted to seeing it evolve and change. And I think one of the greatest things we're going to do over the next coming years is bring in some of the new people, bring in those college graduates, and kind of work through these issues about how sources, you know, treat them and the challenges that they're facing. But I think really the focus is to just pass along this love of journalism and this love for this business. And so I think that it absolutely, the need still exists.
Is there still a need for... you're making an argument here, obviously, for there to continue being a press club, an SPJ, for organizations that are devoted to the future of journalism. Is this one, I mean, is it time to declare victory and go home?
No.
Marion Garmel.
Oh,
okay.
No, absolutely okay. Not. There's still a need for journalists of all stripes to get together, to band together, because there are many battles to be fought. There are censorship battles. There are First Amendment battles. There are one of the big battles that we fight now is accuracy in news, in reporting, getting your facts right, and attribution. People are stealing from each other right and left off the internet. And we try to influence our members to, you know, to be aware of this and not to do this. There's definitely a reason for this kind of organization, and you don't get it in like the old Indianapolis Press Club. It didn't have the same reason. SPJ does the same thing, I think, fights the same battle. But there's definitely a need for... This was always a statewide organization. It always included the people in small newspapers in rural areas, and they needed that kind of... fellowship and networking, and we still need it. We definitely still need it.
We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Heidi, welcome to the program.
Hi there. I had a question for women on with you today.
Certainly.
about the word women in the media. I've seen in some of the music world, and now it seems to be moving into mainstream media, the use of the word female instead of woman. For instance, your speaker today spoke of her class as being predominant females.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an interesting shift, and it speaks more anatomically and less about gender. And I'm just so curious to hear that. It's a bit disturbing to me because it seems like it's diminishing. But I'm curious if your speakers would have anything to say as women about the words used in the media to describe us.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Heidi. We'll see if we can get an answer for you. Thank you. Who would like to take the first stab at that? And you're all looking at each other and once again not looking at me.
Well, I don't find it particularly demeaning. And I think we are women. I just don't see that as a problem, and the kind of word differentiation that you make is probably correct. But we are a gender also, and I think woman is the correct word for us.
And it's probably also a step up. I mean, my guess is when...
It's a step up from ladies,
or
definitely.
Or from girls or whatever,
right.
The gals or any of the others
probably
you had to deal with when you started
That's
in the
true.
Business. Are there still that sort of other people who still refer to you in that diminishing sort of way? Jessica Ray, you're making eye contact with me, so.
I would say in that kind of case, predominantly from sources, you know, being called sweetheart or little girl or, and, you know, when I had that first internship, I was 19. I didn't really look 19. I probably looked more like a high school age student. And so that kind of condescension from sources was very aggravating to me. And it was less about my gender and more about my age. But then my gender kind of snowballed into it with, you know, little girl or sweetie, or you remind me so much of, you know, my great-grandchild or something like that. It just very much so not taking me seriously as a journalist or as a reporter and more as this, you know, little child come to ask you a couple questions kind of thing. So I feel like that was more of an issue than the woman versus female, just the girls, the little girl issue.
What, Tara Puckey, what are the priorities now? You've mentioned that we have huge challenges in the industry. What are the priorities for, you know, the Indiana Woman's Press Club for these next coming years?
I think the focus really needs to be on training and education. I think over the last, you know, with the 2008 shift in the industry, the Women's Press Club, along with journalism associations everywhere, kind of struggled as to, let's just hold on to the ship and keep it steady. And I think now we're seeing a time where there's growth, we're moving forward, we're going to push the rock. And so really what I think I'd like to for us to focus on is making sure that we are educating that next generation. Journalism programs are wonderful. I'll be honest, I stepped out of my journalism, you know, program experience at IUPUI, and there were things I didn't know. And there are things I think that every graduate leaves not knowing, because doing is always just as valuable as that education. So I think this is a point where Women's Press Club and other journalism organizations can step in and say, let us help you. Let us show you these things. And I think training is really where it comes into focus. And I think that the training needs to shift to what the difference, the different things that we're seeing within the industry. Data visualization, all the up and coming things that
probably
kind of
ought to explain to people what data visualization is.
So there. Basically, it's using data, it's crunching numbers, providing basically making data, large amounts of data, make sense to people in an easy way. That's kind of like the layman's definition. But I think that what we need to do is academia is generally just a wee bit behind in some of the things that are up and coming.
Really? I'm shocked.
And it, and so I think what we need to do is kind of take it and make sure that we are being the place, the Women's Press Club and other areas, where those people who are fresh out of college can go to learn these skills and also to make connections to the people who are going to be able to help them cross those bridges.
We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism to mark the Indiana Woman's Press Club's 100th birthday. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can connect, as this listener did, via Facebook at WFYI. She's got a question that says, as a woman in my childbearing years, while also working to establish a professional career in media, how did or do you deal with raising a family as a woman in media? Any advice or reflection on this topic? Thanks. Who wants that one?
I would defer that to Tara. She's a mother of two.
Okay, Tara.
Yeah, I have two girls, 9 and 6, and obviously everybody makes different parenting decisions. But I think the most important decision that I made was to involve my children in my career. So my girls get up in the morning, they watch the news, we talk about it, we have discussions, they read the newspaper. And so I think it really helps them to understand what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and also I'm training them to be wonderful news consumers. So my 9-year-old just did a project last week and she refused to use Wikipedia. I think, you know, I think it's really important to not look at it as two separate issues. I think you are your career, and I think your career is you. It's difficult to separate the two. So I think that that's kind of how I go at it, but that doesn't mean it's right for everyone.
I guess I would posit here that that is still one barrier that's there. I mean, I'm a professional journalist, and no one has ever asked me, how do you balance being a father and having your career?
Right.
The men still do not get asked that question. It's still assumed to be a balancing act almost exclusively for women. We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism to mark the Indiana Woman's Press Club turning 100. My guests are Tara Puckey, who is the incoming club president, Marion Garmel, the secretary, and Jessica Ray, a Franklin College journalism student. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the past, present, and future of women in journalism to mark the, and I guess I have been saying this wrong, the Women's Press Club of Indiana turning 100. And I probably should have asked this earlier, but is there a URL or a website that people can go to learn more about the Women's Press Club of Indiana? Marion Garmel.
Yes, there is. It's WPCIndiana.org. And we have, it lists the scholarships we give. It lists the contests we have. It has a little history of the club. And we also are an affiliate of the National Federation of Press Women, of which we were founding members in 1937. And that's a wonderful organization, too, because they offer, we get to travel to conventions very affordably. I went to Russia on a trip with them. There are many, many opportunities that are
But it sounds like the Women's Press Club of Indiana predates the national one.
Yes, it does.
By almost a journalists are not supposed to be good at math, but that sounds like almost a quarter of a century.
Yes, and it was sort of the same reason for the founding was that women, not only in Indiana but throughout the country, felt a need to share information, to trade stories, to help each other with their jobs, with their careers, and to have workshops. Training, as Tara says, learning how everybody does the business and how to do it better.
We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism to mark the Women's Press Club of Indiana turning 100. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you today?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm 65 years old, and when I was about 5 years old, we lived down the street from a lady who was the first reporter for the Indianapolis Star. And this is a very nice person. Her last name was Olson, but I don't know if that's the name when she worked for the Star. It might have been her, when she was not married. And after I was discharged from the military in 1971, out of the blue, here came a package for me from Mrs. Olson. It was her Colt 38 that she carried while doing stories in the 20s. And what I was going to say is I think being a reporter is a very difficult job at best. And it's always been a difficult job. And it's difficult for men also. But I understand where their journalism students are coming from. You have a nice radio broadcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call, Dave. Marion, I could see you were trying to search. Do you know who that is he's referring to?
No, I really don't. I do not know who that is. But I know that in the early days of journalism, there were women who especially among the muckrakers, some of the early muckrakers, Ida Tarbell, were women.
Physically very dangerous.
Yes, they went into dangers. They went into slum areas. They went into gang areas. One of our founders actually, this was not dangerous, but they were investigative reporters. She did an interesting story when she was living in New York of going to 37 churches in New York to see if they really meant it when they said, we welcome the stranger. And she found that many of them didn't recognize
the stranger at all.
They were always involved in investigating things and trying to make things better.
In your career, did you ever feel physically threatened?
No.
No?
I really didn't. But I didn't go to Vietnam, and I didn't go to Ireland when the troubles were in Ireland. So I never went to any of those places, sorry to say.
Tara, is that a concern now, or is that something, fortunately, we've been able to put in the past, too?
I don't think it's a concern now. I mean, obviously, information is everywhere so quickly that most reporters, I think, generally feel pretty safe. I mean, obviously, there are instances, but I don't think it's a specific thing for women at this point.
Well, women who still go into war zones in Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran, they're kidnapped. They go to places where they're in danger.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism to mark the Women's Press Club of Indiana turning 100. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you very much.
Certainly.
My question has to do with the business of journalism, and I'm thinking more specifically about television journalism because it seems to me in the last probably 10 years, our local news stations, at least two of them that I can think of, have been gearing towards getting younger, especially with their female newscasters and reporters, younger and prettier people to be on air who aren't necessarily doing a very good job of providing the news. And it's getting, sometimes it's got almost a gossipy feel. It doesn't feel like real news. And in an age when the average age of the person watching television for their news is skewing older and older, it's very confusing to me that they would not go ahead and keep their tried and true reporters who maybe are a few pounds overweight, or they might have a couple of laugh lines around their eyes. And I'm just wondering what your panel thoughts were on that and if there's any discussion of that happening in the journalism school.
Thank you very much for the call, Catherine. We'll kick the subject around. Tara, I think I'll throw that one to you first.
Broadcast is definitely not my area of expertise, so I can't comment specifically. I do think it's interesting to watch this shift of news people in general from an older generation to a younger generation. I don't think, honestly, that we've done enough to make sure that the people who have been in news for a long time are trained on the up-and-coming things. I also don't think we've done enough to train new journalists on the foundations of journalism. But as far as appearances go and broadcast, I'm not sure.
Jessica Ray.
I'd be interested to see the numbers of the popularity of particular anchors or, you know, broadcast reporters based on, you know, whether they're young and, as our caller said, she mentioned, like, their attractiveness versus some of your reporters who've been there for a while. And just see if maybe they're going based on popularity numbers. If, you know, this anchor team gets more Facebook likes, or, you know, they're now on Twitter and they have a ton of Twitter followers. You know, I think we're seeing this emergence of popularity on social media influencing maybe who we're seeing on our TV news. And I would be interested to see some numbers from that from a local broadcast.
Well, and I think the thing that that complicates, I mean, obviously the whole idea of how someone looks on television has been around, you know, I mean, there was a landmark case involving Christine Kraft more than 20 years ago that dealt with some of these themes. But then you've also got the complicating factor, and I realize I'm stepping out of my role as interviewer here and, in effect, interviewing myself at the moment. I hope the audience and my guests will bear with me. That each of these stations, because they still have to compete against each other, decide to go after different audiences. There's one station that has made a deliberate decision to go after a much older audience. You see that the anchors and all of those folks tend to be older there, and a couple of stations that have decided to skew younger and therefore are going with younger anchors and much, much younger themed stories. Still, though, in terms of what Tara was saying about preparing people for the basics, at least to my mind, that's the huge challenge in front of the business right now, is that we've got this revolution in the way that we deliver the news and deliver information that creates a greater sense of immediacy and has led some people to believe, frankly, that you don't need journalists anymore, that the wall, that we're a filter that isn't required anymore, but there are problems when there's not somebody verifying the accuracy of the information. And Tara, I'll throw that back to you.
I think that really comes back to A, educating our news consumers. I think there's a lot that journalism associations can do in that way. But B, I think, you know, you talked about how do we do it? How do we teach these journalists to do everything they need to do now? We've introduced medium upon medium, and they're expected to do every single one. They're expected to tweet. They're expected to be on Facebook. They should be on Instagram. They should be on the latest app, taking pictures, writing stories, and all of these things while maintaining journalism ethics and standards and balance. It's a lot, and it's a lot to teach in just a degree program. It's a lot to teach with just experience. And at the same time, you have these people who have these wonderful foundations in journalism, but they don't understand Twitter. And so we have this kind of shift.
I'm chuckling in self-recognition here, but that's okay.
We have this kind of shift in how we make sure that we're transferring things between these kind of two teeter-tottering methods of journalism. And I think that that's where the challenge is.
What do you, Jessica, what do you find most daunting? I mean, you're entering the profession now. You're at the beginning of your career about all of this. Is it scary? Is it exciting? Is it both?
Oh, I definitely think it's both. I think that we're definitely in an emerging generation now where we've been taught some of the basics, but it's almost conflicting with this idea that we need to tweet now, post now, and correct our information later. Because breaking a story isn't about, you know, the newspaper who gets it and can print it in the morning. It's who has it up online first and who has the link to their newspaper website on Twitter, and you get your tweet out first. You know, you're looking at by the minute who can get it out first. And I think what's a little bit scary for me is this idea that, you know, when you go into a story, you're like a one-woman band. You've got your iPhone up to take pictures and video, and you have to have that posted by the end of the night. You need to, you know, have your recorder out, and you're literally like juggling all of these things in your story, but you still have to worry about accuracy. I mean, my goodness, you have to spell the person's name correctly. And I think in a lot of our student journalists, we're seeing this, you know, I got all of this information, but you didn't spell the guy's name right. And so I think that's the scary part, is this concept of I've got to get the news out there quickly, but, you know, I have to have it right for my audience. And I know consumers are getting frustrated with the news outlets that were not accurate, but they're demanding it faster. And I think if you ask anyone in my generation how they found out about the Boston Marathon bombings, probably 75-80% of them are going to say Twitter.
How much of this, and that's it, the fact that we no longer really have a news cycle that begins
right.
and ends, how much of this is a product of that? I mean, I worked when I started in the business. I'm not supposed to talk about my age on the radio, but let's just say it was before yesterday, that, you know, there were decided cycles. If you worked for a morning paper, an afternoon paper, you thought of stories breaking on your time rather than the other
right.
guys or the TV stations. In that sense, and there was a real pressure. I mean, if you had to have a correction run on one of your stories, that was a real walk of shame. And that notion to some degree has diminished right now. Marion Garmel.
Well, there's a terrible need for editors, a great need for editors who get this information. Well, right now, I guess reporters just tweet directly. They don't go through editors. So it's on the reporter to be accurate and to be correct. But it's always been this way in the wire service wars. They battled to get stories out first to their newspaper clients. And if they were wrong, we've always had that. I think we've always had that problem. But it's been slower developing because the whole process was slower, and now someone can just take their iPhone to a war zone and report.
Mm-hmm. And that's the only piece of equipment
yeah.
you need. We are talking about the past, present, and future of women in journalism. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Certainly.
I would like to follow up on that lady's question having to do with TV journalists. I've always wondered whether TV journalists graduate from the same schools of journalism that print journalists graduate from, and question real quickly is has to do with the comment that one of your panelists made where everybody now is being urged to get into the social media end of things. And I've often wondered to what extent journalism schools actually teach critical thinking and objective thinking in evaluating the sorts of things that they're going to find when they get into the social media.
Thank you very much for the call, Lynn. Well, Tara, I'll throw that one to you. I know well, let's take the first question first. How are TV journalists, do they get the same sort of training that what we can't even use the term print journalist anymore. I use text more, but
I can't speak specifically to it coming not from a broadcast background, but I do know that we had broadcast-focused students in the program I was at. I think it's kind of like with any degree that you're going to seek out, you can look for and find schools that specialize in that area. But as far as the basic principles of journalism, ethics, standards, the basic construction, kind of the key tools, that is all going to come from the same school of thought.
Jessica, since you are in the middle of a journalism career right now, or training to be a journalist, the second part of Lynn's question was, are you taught the critical thing? Are you taught to challenge information, basically?
Oh, I definitely think so. I don't think that, I think when we talk about those that, screwed up or didn't get it right the first time, I still think that that is in combination of those who do it right. I still think it's very rare. I know it happens more and we hear about it more, but I think we're overlooking all of those journalists and all of the news that we're getting that is done right. And I think that we are being trained appropriately and we are being trained how to look at, social media sources. But, when you get a tweet that's, the White House has had two explosions and the president is, hurt on Twitter, some people were...
Which we need to emphasize has not in fact happened.
Has not happened, no.
That was the correction out there immediately.
The Associated Press was hacked, their Twitter was hacked, and that was something that, my generation and I think the current reporters out there are facing, that you see this tweet and you're like, oh my goodness, and then you come to find out literally 45 seconds later that it's a hack. And I think that we're very much so used to kind of, oh, this is news, when we are being trained to take a step back and say, okay, well, let's get six more websites to see if this is true.
Marion, I'm going to give you the chance. We're really close on time to give the URL for the Women's Press Club of Indiana one more time, the website.
It's www.wpcindiana.org.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for joining me today. I'd like to start by thanking Tara Puckey, who is the incoming club president. Congratulations on your election. Good luck
thank
in your
you.
Tenure. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Marion Garmel, who worked with me at the Indianapolis Star and News for years and is the secretary and, it sounds like, the institutional memory for the organization. Marion, no. Thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having you here. And Jessica Ray, as a Franklin College journalism student, it's been a pleasure having you on this side of the microphone for once.
Thanks, John.
We will be back next week. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.